This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
I'm a consumer of music, not a producer, Vito Acconci states in his essay Words Before Music from the year 2000. Well, no, not exactly. Like everybody else, I sing now and then, my own songs, made-up songs, but I sing them only to a person I'm sleeping with. The songs have the sound of intimacy, the a cappella voice, the whisper into the ear, but they turn private space into public performance, like lovers singing to each other in an opera, a musical. My songs are born from the person I'm singing to. They're about that person. They embody that person, but my song turns her into my voice. It reduces her to language. Acconci is not a musician, but he has always claimed music as a profound influence on his work. Quote, my best work is always connected to the music of the moment, end quote, he told the Design Boom website. And as we will see, through the late 60s to today, there are specific parallels between the course Acconci's work and his listening habits have taken. It all starts with the voice. Acconci has a deep, lustrous baritone speaking voice that has its own charisma. Kate Linker has written that Acconci's voice, quote, exceeds the literal meaning of the word it utters, which makes it natural that, given his original identity as a writer, his language would come off the printed page not only through oration, but into three-dimensional settings. The activation of his words with the sound of his voice, initially at poetry readings, is in some ways the first of many, quote, attempts to get up from my writer's desk and out into the world, end quote. The starting point of the journey of Acconci's language from the page into street and gallery performances, video art, gallery installation, and ultimately architecture and public works. When Richard Prince, interviewing Acconci for Bomb magazine, impishly asked him if he thought he, quote, would have been able to fuck anyone without it, meaning his voice, Acconci said that that was an exaggeration and went on to describe his voice as one which, quote, lulls you through a dark, disturbed night, promising intimacy, sincerity, integrity, maybe some deep, dark secret, end quote. Comparisons can be made here to a radio talk show host or DJ and to a singer, and there are connotations of these in many of Acconci's works of the 70s. Virtually all of his installations in the 70s involve playing recordings to an unseen audience, an audio tape or multiple audio tapes, usually of his own voice speaking, and sometimes incorporating pre-recorded music or himself humming. He specifically portrays a DJ in the installations Airtime from 1973, a series of wooden boxes containing tapes, each one a, quote, radio station. Acconci calls the tapes radio programs, which relate stories to the installation viewers. In Other Voices for a Second Sight from 1974, this is literally set as a radio studio, with Acconci portraying the all-night DJ, playing light jazz like Chick Corea, as well as the Velvet Underground's White Light, White Heat, but mostly talking through a series of 13 programs, touching on autobiography, political history, and science fiction. And The American Grift from 1976, which has Acconci as an announcer on The Voice of America, while Aaron Copland music and the sounds of gunshots, a woman's scream, and airplanes are heard. In Voice of America from 1975, he speaks about the American dream while presenting examples of Ozark fiddle music, New Orleans piano music, and jazz. Even more tuned into the DJ identity is the video Theme Song from 1973. Acconci edges towards the camera, lying on his side, and starts a tape of several songs on a portable cassette player. He sings along with the Doors song. The lyrics, I can see your face in my mind, set him off on a spoken interlude addressed to the viewer, cajoling them to join him because he's lonely. He continues to do this with a series of songs on the cassette tape, from Bob Dylan's I'll Be Your Baby Tonight to Van Morrison's Ballerina to the Velvet Underground's Pale Blue Eyes to Kris Kristofferson's Me and Bobby McGee, using the lyrics as pickup lines the way a Lothario might in a singles bar, but also identifying the seductive subtext of the songs themselves and of the singer's own literal and figurative relationships to the unseen audience. Theme songs suggest that the songs have already seduced Acconci and he has co-opted them for his own beguiling purposes. It also suggests that the videotape itself is like a pop song and he is the singer, luring the viewer into his own pre-recorded, self-constructed world. It may also be a comment on the listener's inability to talk back to pop's siren song or to enter the world of the record. This is mentioned in somewhat in Akanchi's comment on his use of audio tapes and installations in his piece Some Notes on Walls from 1980. Quote, if a piece uses audio tape and that audio tape consists of voice and that voice is addressed to the viewer and the viewer can't answer back, or if the viewer does try to answer back, that answer is futile since the audio tape won't change in order to respond, then the piece functions as an instrument of oppression. It might be, then, that the piece addresses not the real viewer but some make-believe viewer, somewhere to the side of the real viewer or somewhere in front, end quote. Likewise, a pop song is not addressed to a specific real listener, but to a mass make-believe listener, and a radio DJ is speaking to and or playing music for an unseen audience. In the interview with Prince, Akanchi noted that, quote, my early work depended on media. An action needed reportage. It didn't exist unless it was reported, end quote. The reportage took the form of photographs or video. This also corresponds to the relationship between songs and records and radio at that time. Whatever else they are, songs must be performed and then recorded. The release on a record was the reportage. To some extent, at least in the 20th century, pop records then became actions that would not exist, at least to the general public, without radio play. Akanchi has said that he was influenced at the time by the long discursive songs sung by a solo voice of singer-songwriters like Van Morrison and Neil Young, and certainly his often very personal and confrontational solo performances and videos of the early 70s parallel the confessional, navel-gazing singer-songwriter trend of the same period, for example, Joni Mitchell, Laura Nyro, or Leonard Cohen. Pop songs are also notable for their use of repetition, and of course, top 40 radio plays the same songs over and over again. Repetition, in turn, is another important element in Akanchi's work of this period. In 1970's Learning piece, he played and then repeated phrases from Lead Belly's song Black Betty until he had learned them. In the audio of the installation piece Under History Lessons, he also used the idea of schooling by rote, as his voice announced a series of lessons from one speaker, repeated the lesson title from another speaker, and then layered his voice to imitate the voices of a class, repeating the theme. For example, lesson number one, let's be suckers. The class replies, we are suckers. Repeat, we are suckers, and it goes on and on like that. The idea of memorization also relates to the function of audio tape. Akanchi made reference to tape as a memory storage device in his 1972 installation Memory Box, which was a tape in a box playing his recorded memories of specific people with a mattress and a lamp also provided for the visitor. In the video Face Off from 1972, where he situates his head next to a reel-to-reel tape recorder, shouting no, 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 no as a recording of his own voice plays to conceal the secrets about his life he himself reveals on the tape, Akanchi says he's, quote, going round and round myself, my past, winding myself up tighter and tighter, spinning around my past, all of which has a double meaning as the tape reels rotate. These strains of repetition, singing, and radio DJing come together in 10 packed minutes, a 10-minute audio piece released on a double album of artist recordings called Airwaves in 1977. A short excerpt of tango music is repeated over and over, while Akanchi lugubriously croons off-key on top of it, making numerous permutations and variations of Come and Go With Me, Babe, a typical top pop lyric. Come with me, babe. Go to baby me come. Come before you go, babe. Go until you come. Come until you go. Go to come for me. And go to come with baby. Again, singing with persuasion in mind. He also imitates a radio newscaster reeling off headline after headline. For example, Rhode Island is invaded. Roosevelt coughs crazily, sperm spilling out of his mouth, while Eisenhower licks his lips approvingly. Khrushchev neither confirms nor denies that he has bought Delaware. Kissinger nods hypnotically, his eyes go glassy, preceding each announcement with the word flash and then ending them with the phrase, now do you know what time it is, against the backdrop of clattering typewriters. He then repeats the line, hey, after we go to the movies, okay, several times, and emulates a police band radio with its echoing voice narrating as a suspect approaches, suspect is hitting the street, suspect is lost in the crowd, suspect's body is floating out to sea. while a police siren, ocean sounds, and the sound of the wind is heard in the other channel, as in a radio play. In the next section, he intersperses short excerpts of skittering drum and horn solos from free jazz records by Eric Dolphy, Carl Berger, and Ornette Coleman, with him saying, "Your turn, bastard. No, it's you, motherfucker. Your turn, prickhead. It's up to you, cocksucker," etc. Then comes a chorus of voices moaning and sighing orgiastically, with the tape speeding up, and finally Acconci is singing, "Oh, oh, oh, oh," as the track fades out. 10 packed minutes serves as a kind of audio signpost for Acconci's activities in the mid-70s, which is marked by his abandonment of performance and a movement to installations. The piece itself could be seen as an installation created for a record album instead of a gallery. Voice and tape were instrumental in making the transition from performances to installations. Acconci told me, quote, "I and a lot of people of my generation, I think, were desperate to separate the idea of performance from theater, but I'm not sure if it really was that different. I tried to make it different by saying I would never really repeat performances because I thought performance wasn't about rehearsal. Performance was about stage fright, you know. What I loved about the word performance was the form and the sense of perform a contract. You said you were going to do something and you do it, but if you do it again, then the first time was just a rehearsal, so it doesn't count. Yeah, you could do it for a number of days over a one-week period, two-week period, but to do it later was like going through the motions," end quote. By transferring the repetition of a performance to a tape recording of himself in an installation, Acconci made good on the idea of separating performance from theater. He was also looking to remove himself from his work, but not entirely. And again, I quote, "I started to wonder, is work of mine stuck in notions of finding oneself? People were having different notions by 1973, 74, 75. Self wasn't this thing you could isolate. Self wasn't this thing you could contemplate. Self was only part of a social system, a political system. I wanted work of mine to be part of that system, so I felt like there shouldn't be this focus on me anymore. Also, it started to bother me while I was doing live stuff that everybody who knew a piece of mine knew what I looked like. So is this doing work? Is this doing art? Or is it developing a kind of personality cult? So I wanted to withdraw from myself, but I didn't know how to do that totally. I could withdraw from presence of my body, but the way that audio in the installation started for me was, I didn't know how to completely let myself go. So voice was a kind of vestige of myself. It might have begun that way. What I started to be attracted to about voice and about voice without the body there was that I started to be aware of things like the fact that you can close your eyes, but you can't close your ears. That sound seemed to be this pervasive thing. In Western culture, we talk about a mystic seeing things, but an insane person hears things. Common expressions like a song you can't get out of your head. Western culture attaches sound to some kind of pressure, possible oppression. Also in the 70s, Acconci became a fan of punk rock, whose emphasis on physicality and an aura of violence, both implicit and explicit, could be said to, quote, attach sound to some kind of pressure, possible oppression, end quote. It also spoke to his interest in repetition. In his essay, Public Space in a Private Time, he wrote, quote, "The message of punk was, do what you can do and do it over and over until everyone else is driven crazy," end quote. In a 1981 interview in Art Papers magazine, he commented on punk's, quote, "frontality. The band sounded as though all the instruments were on the same levels in the same positions," end quote. This certainly relates to the kind of democratization Acconci achieved in his early magazine, 0 to 9, in which both Gustave Flaubert and Dan Graham were recorded the same neutral type on a mimeograph page, but also to his statement from Some Notes on Walls that, quote, "when the text of an audio tape is short and the sound is repeated like a machine, the tape can function as one more physical element, analogous to the other physical surfaces of the piece and no more or less important than they are," end quote. He also compared the flatness of the punk wall of sound to that of TV ads. Certainly the physical proximity of audience member to band member in a small venue like CBGB's versus the distance between fan and performer at the arena rock concerts that had come into prominence in the early 70s has a similarity to the one-to-one relationship of video to viewer that Vito described in Some Notes on My Use of Video. Film equals landscape, silence, the sound comes from something too large to be a person, talk functions as background music, myth-making titles. Video equals close-up sound. Moreover, Akanji's abandonment of performance in 1974 is coincidentally concurrent with the opening of CBGB's the same year. As he explained his decision, quote, "Once I left the stage, once I was behind the scenes, the space turned from a performance area to a potential performance area. It was implied that I could go there at any time, but of course, so could you. Our terms were more equal," end quote. Since almost anyone could form a band in the crucible of the punk scene, one could say that CBGB's also represented a potential performance area. Someone in the audience could very well be on stage themselves in a matter of weeks. The do-it-yourself approach of the punk movement and its blurring of the line between performer and audience can also be felt in Akanji's viewer-activated installations and self-erecting architecture of the late 70s. Akanji also recognizes that, quote, "I think only in 1976, when Sex Pistols and Ramones were second nature to me, did I realize that installations were about the viewers. The viewers could be in this place, and it was as if they were in a kind of community meeting place, and I can be addressing them." This is particularly relevant to installations like "Where Are We Now? Who Are We Anyway?" from November 1976 at Sonneben Gallery, which was set up with wooden tables and stools, and Akanji saying on tape, "Now that we're all here, and what do you think?" as if he was conducting a group business meeting in an office or organizing a town meeting. It is also significant that art students of this time who turned to making music, such as Christian Marclay, Kim Gordon of Sonic Youth, and Michael Girard of the Swans, as well as many of their forebears in the no wave scene, which immediately followed punk in New York, have often been quoted in interviews as saying that the punk clubs were where all the action was at this time, and not the galleries, and they realized they wanted to be making art for a club space, i.e. music, not for a gallery. Akanji comes to roughly the same conclusion in his own way. And I quote, for me, once I started thinking of installation as a kind of community meeting place, and it took me a long time, I started to realize I didn't want to do things in galleries. I don't think my stuff has anything to do with art. I'm treating a gallery as if it was a plaza or a town square, but I'm kidding myself. A gallery is never going to be a plaza or a town square, laughs. If I really think my work needs that or I want that, I better find a way to get there. So, rather than form a band, Akanji turns to public works and architecture as a way out of the galleries. But like these art students who had no previous musical training before forming bands, Akanji had no architectural training before going into architecture, just as he had no filmmaking background when he started making videos. When I mentioned this to Akanji, he replied, quote, "That's probably one of the reasons why punk so resonated with me. I always felt like I'm a person with a short attention span, perhaps. I seem to want to go to some other field. I know the flaws of this position, but I like the ideas of coming to a field from other fields because you're kind of like a visitor from another planet. There's a lot of things you don't know because you don't know the language, but at the same time you might notice things that habituants of that field take for granted. So maybe you can stretch something. I know that I could come to architecture from another field, but I know that without coming to it as a we, I couldn't do it. I can only provide one part of it. The studio really is a we. It really is a group of people playing off each other where the individual ideas become part of a whole group of ideas. I don't think in any of the projects we do you could say, this is so-and-so's idea. I find that an incredibly exciting way of thinking." Now, Akanji's trajectory in this time period is quite reminiscent of that of the rock producer and artist Brian Eno. A former art student, Eno joined the band Roxy Music as a synthesizer player. Despite the fact that he had no instrumental background at all, but was an expert on tape recorders and was an experienced performer of experimental music such as Cornelius Cardew's piece Great Learning or Lamont Young's X for Henry Flint, which were not scored for instruments. Wearing makeup and flashy outfits on stage, he rivaled the band's leader, Brian Ferry, for visibility and attention from fans and the music press. When he quit Roxy Music in 1973 after two albums, he recorded a series of solo records of songs, performing live very rarely, and ultimately developed instrumental ambient music, which consisted of tape loops and was meant to tint an architectural space. The first example was titled Music for Airports and was initially installed in New York's JFK Airport before being released as an album, rather than be consumed as entertainment. He stopped writing and recording songs in 1978 in favor of working on ambient music and producing bands like Talking Heads and U2. Like Akanshi, he sought to leave his self and the performance spotlight behind, let his own music be accomplished by machines with minimal input. He now favors computer software that allows music to generate itself from initial inputs and ultimately embraces a kind of architecture, in his case, a kind of sonic architecture. Akanshi's fandom of punk was well known. The late artist Steven Perino nicknamed him Vito Ramone, and in retrospect, one could even see Didi Ramone's practice of shouting out 1, 2, 3, 4 before every song in a Ramones concert as striding Akanshi as a distant cousin of many of the number-oriented works featured in 0 to 9, such as 12 minutes, in which numbers are placed under the text counting up from 1. And much later, in the essay Words Before Music, Akanshi even wrote, "I'm not a musician, but I can count as well as the next person. 1, 2, 3, 4. Somebody stop me, or else I'll go up to the billions. Hearing myself count proves that I've shut everything else out. I can count the silence." In the 80s, Akanshi turned to architecture and public works. He commented to me that, quote, "Architecture seems to me to have nothing to do with sculpture and everything to do with music, in the sense that both architecture and music are making a surrounding, are making a context, they're making a kind of ambience. That probably doesn't apply to live music, it probably applies to listening to music. Live music maybe requires too much attention, whereas music we listen to is almost like a version of Satie's wallpaper music. It's a surrounding. You don't necessarily have to pay attention," end quote. Just as a radio DJ is playing music for people to have on in the background while they do their work or wait in a doctor's office or a bank, Akanshi is designing structures for people to pass through. This also recalls his decision to use audio in virtually all of his 70s installations, but not video. And again, I quote, "I think I was afraid that video was too much of a point, was too much of a kind of focal point. As soon as video is in something, a passerby, a viewer, is caught up in the video screen, whereas in audio, there isn't that focal point. Audio becomes part of the space. It's not a point within the space. It seemed important to me that it was a space you're in the middle of and not a focal point you're in front of." Currently, Akanshi has been listening to noise music like Merzbow and Hino Keiji, as well as more ambient electronic music like Vladislav Delay. As he told a group of high school students in the Museum of Modern Art's Red Studio program, I quote, "In the 90s, I got really excited by music again, especially by the mid-90s. I got really excited by Tricky, Massive Attack. I got really excited by, you know, trip-hop, by this kind of mix of something that was person-made, mixed with something that was machine-made, or electronic music that started to involve a kind of, like, mix of cultures. More recently, I think the tendency in the studio, and certainly my tendency now, is more electronic music, ambient music, which I think is very much like the kind of stuff we're doing. We're trying to do architecture. I mean, architecture is about being inside something, and so is music. And music wins because there doesn't really have to be a thing there. Music makes a surrounding without it having to be physical, a physical surrounding. In some ways, I think probably a lot of people who do architecture have a kind of dream of it wanting to be as unphysical as music." Akanshi says that he always listens to music while he's working. He explained in an interview with Mark C. Taylor that, quote, "I need to be in a city. Even if I don't use that city, I know other people are using it in order to design city spaces. If I listen to silence, I would have to be alone, I guess. The place I designed would be all white. The equation of silence with aloneness is important here. In consideration of his discussion of public works in Notes on My Photographs, 1969 to 1970, as, quote, "a process of expanding an I, a place where my voice might bring you together." Of course, voice is not meant literally here, but music is also a process of expanding an I. Even when Neil Young or Van Morrison were looking to locate the self through song, they already had an audience that they were communicating to. Music is something that brings people together, whether to dance or at a concert or to create and perform it. Music, as a personal expression designed to be a shared experience, is a model for Vito Akanshi. He is the writer, artist, architect, as singer-songwriter DJ, whose work must be brought to life from notation into a public space to be enjoyed by as many people as possible. And that concludes my remarks, but I would like to add a postscript, which is that last night, as I was walking over here from the lecture, I overheard two women talking about the lecture, and one was complaining that Vito had not talked about the bicycle piece, which was one of her favorites. And it occurred to me that it was like someone walking away from a concert complaining that the performer had not done one of their favorite songs. So I think what we heard last night, beyond being a lecture about his work, was in some ways a concert of Vito's work, in the same way that the Rolling Stones would be expected to perform Satisfaction at a concert. You would expect Vito to talk about Seedbed in a lecture. And I think that also really speaks to his identification with music, and I think the way that his work can be perceived in much the same way you can perceive music. Thank you.